As we talk about Thanksgiving with Dr. Steve Nash, the curator of archaeology here at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, we find ourselves turning to the subject of food. We usually think about the Thanksgiving feast as turkey, cornbread, beans, squash. What's interesting is that these are New World foods, are they not?
Yeah, they're New World food, and Americans can be really good at kind of claiming ownership of other people's stuff and claiming it as our own. Our sense of historic time depth isn't very good. We're a very young nation, 250 years old or so, but culturally and technologically, we always think about new and improved, and we oftentimes forget about the history of things. What I love about Thanksgiving is the fact that much of the menu, as you mentioned, is actually New World crops. These are food items that they did not bring with them from Europe, that they adopted from Native America. And I think we don't do enough credit to Native Americans for their work in domesticating these crops and developing these foodstuffs and so on. We need to give credit where it's due.
Well, what's exciting about the food of the Americas is that we've got turkey, a delicious bird. That bird had been domesticated by Americans.
Yeah, we have evidence of turkey domestication here in Colorado, in southwestern Colorado in the Four Corners region, going back a couple thousand years. And they were domesticated. Some have made the argument that it wasn't for food, that turkeys were domesticated for their feathers and make turkey feather blankets, which will keep you warm. Turkeys and humans have a long relationship. It's a lot more than just the pilgrims and us today. It's a long intertwined relationship here in the Americas.
My understanding is that the natives, when they came over the Bering Strait, brought with them dogs, but everything else that they ate and used here in America, both continents, were domesticated here, whether it's turkeys or llamas or sweet potatoes or potatoes. And the thing about corn is it was a difficult cereal to domesticate and looks actually nothing like its wild progenitor.
That's correct, yeah. Corn has been in the process of domestication for 4,000 or 5,000 years as well. And the corn cobs back in the day were the size of your thumb or something like that, with 7 or 8 rows of kernels. It was enough to supplement the diet, but it wasn't that you were going to be eating corn all day long, because that's not healthy either. The one thing I would like to see us do is add guinea pig to the Thanksgiving diet, because guinea pigs were domesticated and eaten in the Andes. Why pick on the turkeys?
As much as I like guinea pigs as pets, they're the equivalent of the European rabbit, as far as a domesticated rodent that makes for good food.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have to be a little more open-minded. A lot of these delicious foods that we eat at Thanksgiving are from the Americas. The harvest festival that we think of as Thanksgiving is, in some sense, unique to the American story, but in other ways, it's not unique, is it, Dr. Nash?
One of the reasons why anthropology and archaeology are so interesting is because we can turn that lens right back on ourselves. It's not about the other. It is about us as much as it is about anybody else. And so if we think about what is happening at Thanksgiving, anybody, any society that has a growing cycle where you have to work and work and work through planting and then tending the crops and then harvesting and then processing, that's a tremendous amount of work, 6 months or so each year, and then you got to wrap up and get ready for the winter, they're going to have a harvest festival. You know, we see this with solstice festivals and equinox festivals and all that kind of stuff. There are certain patterns and rhythms that are found worldwide that human beings honor worldwide. And so as important as Thanksgiving is to our society and is historically, I also like to think of it as one example of a harvest festival, and there are hundreds of those around the world.
And I like to think of it as a moment of gratitude no matter what. I think those of you European descent do owe a lot to the native population that helped out the pilgrims during their hardest days.
It's like Lewis and Clark and their travels west, you know, it's the manifest destiny and quote-unquote taming of the West. They would not have made it if they weren't getting substantial amounts of help from Native American tribes all up and down the Missouri River. I mean, they simply would not. We tend to recognize, reflect on, remember the conflict, but human beings have been cooperating for a very long time as well, and we need, especially in this climate today, we need to remember that cooperation is a good thing, and it's a fun thing, and it's an interesting thing, and it's a necessary thing.
One of the most beautiful examples of that cooperation that people can see here at the museum is the beadwork. Glass was brought by the Europeans to trade with the native peoples here, and the native peoples took those glass beads and turned them into an art form which is really unrivaled.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have Kathy Dickerson, a Kiowa beadworker, here at the museum today, downstairs in storage, going over our Kiowa beadwork collection to learn from it, to describe it to us, to teach us about it, and so on. That'll be part of a book coming out in a couple years on our Plains beadwork collection, which has been said to be better than the Smithsonian's, and we'll see.
I always had a hunch this museum was better than the Smithsonian.
Yeah.